Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Children weep at the sound of our voices, and this is Unfeatured Articles. Howdy doody, that's right, I've brought it back, and welcome ladies and gentlemen to Unfeatured Articles, the show where we go onto Wikipedia, we find some articles, and we just talk about them till the cows come home.
Cool.
And those cows, they'll be coming home today.
Yeah.
Because let me tell you.
You're really leaning into this cowboy thing.
This episode is going to be our best episode so far.
Cool.
Big call.
Yeah.
We probably won't live up to it. Let's see if we can do it, boys. I'm here with my co-host, as I am every week.
Uh-huh. He's coming to the studio wearing a cowboy hat and talking about cows and saying howdy doody. It's a shift.
It's a shift from how he usually operates.
I've only got the boots on.
Nothing but the boots, nothing but the hat. I quite like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, my good friend and co-host, James Keogh.
That's me.
That's you.
I'm sick.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Which might be not the most pleasant for my voice, but, we're dealing with it.
We're getting through.
I'm using some lozenges.
That's the
lozenge
way.
Lozenge boy.
That's I'm a lozenge the way. Boy.
How about you, Riley McNamara? Are you sick?
Of you.
Oh, fuck.
I knew you were going to say that. I looked at you and I just saw it fly in your eyes and you're like, I'm going to fucking destroy you.
I've got you. No, I'm good. I'm good.
Lovely.
Yeah, glad to be in the room. Glad to be with the boys.
Glad Always. To be in the room.
Gonna talk some shit about some Wikipedia stuff.
I believe we are.
Highlight of my week.
Yeah. Can I do a quick preface and a quick...
Please.
Thing. So we've had a lot of fans writing in and speaking to us.
No, we haven't, but keep going.
Well, actually, yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. At least a couple.
This is news.
Talking to us, and I want to make a clarification. On this podcast, we will not talk about furries. We've decided that in advance because, okay, here's the thing. What we do on this show when we're talking about these Wikipedia articles and the way our humor is, maybe it's a bit of like tongue-in-cheek, like making fun of I don't want to make fun of furries. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we don't kink shame here. We've said this
exactly,
many times before.
Exactly. And also everyone knows about furries.
Everyone knows about them.
You know, it's all...
How many people... I know one person that we all know has suggested many times that we do a furry article. She tried to go past you and sneakily get me to do it.
Yeah. She contacted all of us individually trying to get us to do furries. It's not happening.
I don't know why you're so good. Did anybody else?
I had one other person say
about furries.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Maybe we'll have a furry on the podcast.
Well, it was one other person who knew the other person and knew that person
spy.
Was campaigning.
Spy
so, like, it was like this it's communal hot, effort to get us to try. We're not doing it.
We're not doing it.
Uh-uh.
Ain't happening.
That's not canon, but it is.
But it is canon on this show.
That's not canon.
So I did want to specify that. If you're a furry out there, you're great. We respect you. And we respect anyone who has any sort of thing.
We respect everybody. Everybody love everybody.
Yeah,
everybody love everybody.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And that we're not going to make fun of you. Anyway.
But Vore, we made fun of Vore.
Did we make fun of Vore?
I talked about Vore.
We talked about Vore. I remember saying, like, if you're into that, that's okay.
Oh, yeah, no, that's when we were like, we don't kink shack.
Yeah, we don't kink shack.
Yeah, that's not anybody. That's right, yeah.
That's where we set up the...
We just want to be a kind, welcoming community for whatever you're into.
It just makes fun... Of silly things.
Of silly things.
Of silly things.
More than usual,
like what,
not
Curtis?
Silly people. Well, like what? What like have what? We got? Are you starting us off?
I'm not starting. I thought Mr. Riley was going to start us off.
Well, let's...
I can.
Please.
Okay. Go for it, man.
Every time I say, before we start recording, I'm like, okay, so what's our order this week? Bang, 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 bang. And then every time you guys are always like, so Curtis, are you going to start us off? And I'm like, no, I'm not.
You just talk a lot, though. We just expect it.
You can take the stage.
I'm the talky man. No, Riley, tell me what your article is without delay.
Grey goo.
Excellent.
Cool.
Is that the end of the? Is that the end of it?
Any guesses what this is, boys?
So grey goo.
Grey goo.
Let me see. This is, let me guess, some goo.
It might be grey.
Uh-huh, and perhaps it's of a greyish hue.
Strong guess, strong guess. Do you want me to tell you what it is?
Please.
Grey goo is a hypothetical end-of-the-world scenario involving molecular nanotechnology in which out-of-control, self-replicating robots consume all biomass on Earth while building more of themselves.
Oh, there is an episode of Futurama that is literally that.
I love this.
Literally that. Like, Bender starts to, like, produce tiny robots on, like, a molecular level and then they slowly just start to, like, take over the world and build, like,
eat away
the world and
actually,
build
up. I think I have seen that.
Yeah, it's a good episode.
He grey goos.
Futurama is such a good TV show.
It very much is.
Yeah.
Rip Futurama.
The Futurama Appreciation Podcast.
Yes, this is us.
I'm going to talk about grey goo.
Please do.
Please.
Yeah.
As I was mentioning, it involves molecular nanotechnology being out of control, consumes all the biomass on Earth and builds more of themselves, a scenario that's being called ecophagy. Ecophagy, I think. ECOPHAGY. Ecophagy, maybe?
Ecophagy.
I
don't know.
That sounds good. You are a cunning linguist, James Kehoe.
You're right.
Which translates to eating the environment, or more literally, eating the habitation. So the original idea assumed that machines were designed to have this capability, while popularizations have assumed that machines might somehow gain this capability by accident.
It's like the
AI out of control thing. Self-replicating machines of the macroscopic variety were originally described by mathematician John von Neumann and are sometimes referred to as von Neumann machines or clanking replicators. Term grey goo was coined by nanotechnology pioneer Eric Drexler in his 1986 book Engines of Creation. In 2004, he stated, "I wish I'd never used the term grey goo."
Regrets it immediately.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah.
Maybe not immediately, but...
After a few years.
In 18
looking
years.
Looking back on his deathbed. Just like, I shouldn't have called it grey goo.
I should have called it the Drexler principle.
Yeah, right.
Engines of Creation mentions grey goo in two paragraphs and a note. Huh. So it's there's not a lot of it in there. The definition, his first definition was, imagine such a replicator floating in a bottle of chemicals making copies of itself. The first replicator assembles a copy in 1,000 seconds. Then two replicators then build two more in the next 1,000 seconds. The four build another four, then the eight build another eight. At the end of 10 hours, there are not 36 new replicators, but over 68 billion.
Oof.
68 billion.
Jesus.
In under 10 hours. In less than a day, they would weigh a ton. In less than 2 days, they would outweigh the planet.
Oh, whoops.
And in 4 days, they would exceed the mass of the sun and all the planets combined.
In another 4 hours, not another 4 days, so 2 days and hours, they would exceed the mass of the sun and all the planets combined.
Yeah, but like...
If the bottle of chemicals hadn't run dry long before.
I believe the bottle of chemicals in the Futurama episode is beer.
Huh.
Yeah, I believe it
is.
Oh, yeah,
that's right. I think I have seen that episode. But like, they're tiny. I'll just squish them with my foot. Easy. Done. Take that, grey goo, you tiny
all
robots.
All 68 billion of them?
Yeah, because I'm like bigger than them. So, excuse you, tiny robots. I'm bigger than you and I'm going to squash you with my foot.
Get them.
They didn't think of that, did they, Mr. Science men and women in the field of science?
Another win for James Keogh in the endless battle between him and science.
I've done it again.
He's done it. So according to Drexler, the term was popularized by an article in science fiction magazine Omni, which also popularized the term nanotechnology in the same issue.
Oh.
Drexler says arms control is a far greater issue than grey goo nanobugs.
Look fair.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. In a History Channel broadcast, a contrasting idea is referred to in a futuristic doomsday scenario. Quote, in a common practice, billions of nanobots are released to clean up an oil spill off the coast of Louisiana. However, due to a programming error, the nanobots devour all carbon-based objects instead of just the hydrocarbons of the oil. The nanobots destroy everything, all the while replicating themselves. Within days, the planet is turned to dust.
Yikes. Yeah, look, that'd suck.
These are like all...
Wouldn't be fun.
These are all pretty hectic kind of scenarios that they're describing. Blah, blah, blah. Drexler notes that geometric growth made possible by self-replication is inherently limited by the availability of suitable raw materials. So that's positive. That's hopefully true, it won't happen. That's a good thing, I guess. He uses the term grey goo not to indicate colour or texture, but to emphasise the difference between superiority in terms of human values and superiority in terms of competitive success. It then goes on to quote, "Though masses of uncontrolled replicators need not be grey or gooey, the term grey goo emphasises the replicators able to obliterate life."
So more the idea that it becomes this massive wave of, mass.
Yeah, that's it.
Jeez Lord.
So he talks about some of that stuff. More recently conceded that there is no need to build anything that even resembles a potential runaway replicator. This would avoid the problem entirely.
True.
So Drexler says, who came up with the idea, he then goes on to say that we don't need one and so it's not a problem. So that's not going to happen.
We could, though.
We could.
We could do that,
We
though.
Could. He argues self-replicating...
Saturday afternoon project.
Yeah, just create a self-replicating...
What are we doing tomorrow, boys? he argues that self-replicating machines are needlessly complex and inefficient. So I know, there's that, I guess. Mm. So one of the other bits on here is ethics and chaos.
Yeah.
And it goes on to describe, grey goo is a useful construct for considering low probability, high impact outcomes from emerging technologies.
Sure.
Thus, it's a useful tool in the ethics of technology. Daniel A. Valero applied it as a worst case scenario thought experiment for technologies, technologists contemplating possible risks from advancing a technology. This requires that a decision tree or event tree, I'm assuming we've all played the games where, you've got like an upgrade tree.
Sure, yeah.
I imagine it's something like that. So if you make this decision, it then goes to what if you do about here and then so on and so on and so on.
Yeah.
I don't know if the mic's picked that up, but someone's phone is bloody buzzing.
I'm a popular man.
Oh, it's James Kehoe.
James Kehoe, do you want to take care of that?
Yeah, all right.
Take care of that. All right, keep going.
All right. So, yeah, it requires a decision tree include even extremely low probability events if such events have an extremely negative and irreversible consequence, i.e. application of the precautionary principle. What that is, I do not know.
The precautionary principle.
The precautionary principle generally defines actions on issues considered to be uncertain, for instance, applied in assessing risk management. Okay, that sounds boring. We're going to go away from that. Diana Irving admonishes that any error in science will have a rippling effect. And certainly,
okay.
I think we could agree that the grey goo would have a big old ripple effect if that was ever to come around. Well,
James, you're back. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
You didn't have to make a thing out of it.
I did.
Thank you for rejoining us. That's kind of
grey
all
goo.
Of this. It's There's a lot of this kind of stuff in fiction,
as
you can imagine.
A lot of good,
I hear there's an episode of Futurama about it, but I don't know if you guys know about
it. I haven't seen Futurama.
I've never even heard of it. What is it?
You wouldn't know.
Okay, fair enough.
So grey goo.
Grey goo.
Good article.
Doesn't sound too promising. Let's not go there.
Let's not do it.
let's not do it.
Official position of the podcast is that we don't want to do it.
No grey goo for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I'll stick to my other coloured goos. Can I say, did you want to go or can I go? I forgot the order we decided. Again.
Jesus fuck. No, you go, James.
All right.
What do you got for us?
Oh, well, once my computer boots up.
Oh, no.
Here we go. No, never mind.
Get a Mac. It'll work instantly.
Fair enough.
Oh, you are wrong. Sorry. So,
welcome to our Mac versus Windows debate podcast. No, so your one just now, Grey Goo, was very technology-based, and as is mine, we've got a bit of a theme.
Please tell me more.
Theme happening this episode. So
mine will not continue that theme.
All right.
Good. Pick a different one.
Yeah.
I will not.
So I study IT at Queensland University of Technology.
Oh, big shout out to QUT.
Boy.
I have my degree from there.
You do?
I use it as a placemat. Keep going.
What'd you study, Curtis?
Drama.
Well, I mean...
No, it's good. I like my drama degree.
I'm also studying drama. I'm doing a double degree.
Yeah.
That's an interesting mix.
No one's told me that it's an interesting mix.
What do you do with that, James?
Oh, great question, and I'll tell you later.
Tell me about this thing.
Yeah, first. Let's. So in studying IT, obviously I'm doing computer science. Or not obviously I'm doing computer science, but in computer science, obviously I have to learn a lot about programming languages, which is why I've prepared, or I've found quite fascinating, this article called Esoteric Programming Language.
Right? Okay.
So an esoteric programming language is a programming language designed. So a programming language like Java or C or Python is what you would use to code, to write computer programs. All that kind of stuff. And it has structure, it has syntax. Essentially, there are different rules for different languages that define what you put down and how that prints out various inputs and outputs. So it's a programming language designed to test the boundaries of computer programming language design as a proof of concept, as software art, as a hacking interface to another language, or as a joke. So these are programming languages that are essentially completely usable. You wouldn't use them as, well, usability is rarely a goal. It's often quite the opposite. Their usual aim is to remove or replace conventional language features while still maintaining a language that is Turing complete, that is able to be kind of recognizable as a language. I've got a few examples here, and the first one I want to tell you about is LOL code.
Oh, no.
So LOL code is based on, like, LOL speak, like, I can has a cheeseburger,
ruffle culture,
kind of early, like, 2005 memes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it's an actual language that breaks down into different, like, meme words. So for an example, opening a file called like lolcats.txt or something like that, you'd open up and you'd get the version number, which is the latest is 1.2. So you'd go, hi, H-A-I, hi, 1.2, Ken has standard IO, please open file lolcats.txt, awesome, thanks, visible file, oh noes, invisible, error, okay, thanks, bye. And
hatred.
That is
hatred.
I'm sitting here fuming.
The example commands to open a file, and error handling as well for that. So that's LOL code. As well as that is the Shakespeare programming language.
Okay, I'm on board with this. I'm on board.
Here we go. Yeah, I thought you guys might enjoy this. Give it to me. So essentially the way it's broken down is it is designed to make programs appear to be something other than programs. In this case, Shakespearean plays. The character list in the beginning of the program declares a number of stacks, naturally with names like Romeo and Juliet. These characters enter into dialogue with each other in which they manipulate each other's values, push and pop each other, do input-output. They can ask each other questions which behave as conditional statements. I'll give you an example.
Please.
So it does a title, which is just, you know, a normal title, and then they declare all the variables with a name and description, and then it's broken down into acts and scenes. Acts sort of, I guess, like methods, and then scenes are sort of like the, whatever. It's all code.
Yeah.
And then, so act one, Hamlet's insults and flatteries. Scene one, the insulting of Romeo. Enter Hamlet and Romeo. Hamlet, you lying, stupid, fatherless, big, smelly, half-witted coward. You are as stupid as the difference between a handsome, rich, brave hero and thyself. Speak your mind. As you are brave as the sum of your fat, little, stuffed, misused, dusty, old, rotten codpiece and a beautiful, fair, warm, peaceful, sunny summer's day. You are as healthy as the difference between the sum of the sweetest, reddest rose and my father and yourself. Speak your mind. And that goes on. That continues to go on and on. Essentially, what that is setting up is to print out the words "Hello World," and it is two acts totaling five scenes, which is filled with sentences exactly like the ones there, where each of those like adjectives and the word "Speak Your Mind" is about manipulating data and outputting the letter. So essentially, that goes on for like literally five scenes, and it puts out the words "Hello World." That's stupid. It's very stupid. and it's meant to be. Another example.
Who has the time for that?
So
holy shit. We're on the internet, remember, Ollie?
Like, I apologize. I forgot where we were.
Malbolge is an esoteric public language that is named after the eighth circle of hell. in Dante's Inferno because it was specifically designed to be almost impossible to use via a counterintuitive, crazy operation, base 3 arithmetic, and self-altering code. So essentially the code that you put in this, yeah. every time it enacts like a piece of code, every time it outputs something, it changes the way it works because it's based on the actual memory values that particular things yeah. hold. What I've done is I've gone into a text-to-speech editor
yeah.
and copied in what it takes to say hello world.
Yeah.
And I've kind of got that.
So in so when you say hello world, that's literally just a dialogue box appearing on the screen that says hello world.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. Exactly. It's a pretty standard like test of a language yeah. or a test of something. So essentially, and I'll try to get this up to the mic. So this is kind of a butchered idea because the text-to-speak editor doesn't like read every value, every yeah. Number, but.
Equals 96NY32VX/4R0 no JKFH BCY equals ZKW percent dog 4 US0EJC8DC.
But that was, yeah, that's Hello World in Malbolge, which is designed to be completely like
unusable. Right.
The last one I want to kind of look at is, it's called, and I don't actually have any examples of it, but it is called Pikachu.
Oh,
and
no.
It is designed, the programs look like the dialect of Pikachus, and its stated purpose is to be easily usable by Pikachus. programs written in the language should be readable and writable by any Pikachu. To this end, Pikachu makes use of only 3 valid syntax elements, Pika, and Pikachu. So basically what I'm saying is from now until the end of my degree, I'm going to be submitting all of my programs in Pikachu, obviously.
Oh, obviously. Do Shakespeare.
Yeah, I would do it in Shakespeare, no yeah. doubt. I would have Jesus. To like write so much prose. It's amazing. Curtis, what have you got for us?
Holy That's, Christ. Oh. That was a rabbit hole.
There are
I
recommend you, yeah, if you have the time, just check out the list of these esoteric programming.
If you want to
languages.
Feel a bit mad, have a look at this stuff.
And there are ones that like are built to create pieces of art as well. Like there's this one that outputs bitmaps that look like this abstract art. And yeah. the one for Hello World, I'll include, there's like a photo of it in the article. I'll
yeah, put it in the show notes.
Show
yeah.
notes as well. But it looks beautiful. But anyway, I'll pass it on to you, my Please. Friend Curtis.
My God. Oof. Okay, I need to come back from that. That was a wild ride. All right, lads. The forest swastika.
Oh, no.
Why?
Hang on, the forest?
The forest swastika.
Oh, God.
The forest swastika was a patch of larch trees covering 0.36 hectares area of pine forest near Zernikau, Uckermarks district in Brandenburg in northeast Germany. And it was arranged to look like a swastika with their light colours.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, intentionally?
Intentionally.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, reports say that the larches were planted in 1938. It is unclear how the trees came to be planted and arranged in such fashion. It seems they were planted in commemoration of Adolf Hitler's birthday, either by local Hitler Youth members or by a park warden, right?
Okay.
And for a few weeks every year, in the autumn and the spring, the colour of the larch trees would change, contrasting with the deep green of the pine forest. So they would become like a light kind of yellow
yeah.
sort of thing. And it would be like very different to the surrounding green trees. The short duration of the effect combined with the fact that the image could only be discerned from the air and the relative scarcity of privately owned airplanes in the area meant that the swastika went largely unnoticed after the fall of the Nazi Party.
Oh, dang.
During the subsequent communist period of East and West Germany, right? So this was in the Western... part of West Germany was the Soviet-controlled one, right?
Yes.
Yes, cool. Sorry, I just clearly need to brush up on my... No, okay, it was East Germany.
We're getting
Lovely.
Some
okay,
mixed
right.
messages from the producer.
East Germany was the one controlled by... was the communist one.
Sure.
And it was in this area.
Let me just Google that. Which one was the communist one?
So Soviet authorities reportedly knew of its existence but made no effort to remove it. However, in 1992, the reunified German government ordered aerial surveys of the all state-owned land, just as like, we're just going to like, and Make sure, yeah, like take database of all that kind of stuff.
Right.
The photographs were examined by forestry students who immediately noticed the design.
Oh, dang.
So they were just like, oh, she's back. Like,
is that?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, so, dear.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So not sure how, but sometime during the reign of the Nazi Party in Germany, these trees were planted in a formation that made them, during the fall and early spring, take on the appearance of a swastika because their colour would change in deep contrast to the surrounding dark green pine trees.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And with what they... Were they planted as like saplings or were they full-grown trees when they were planted? Like what?
I believe they were planted as saplings. So it took them about 10 years to grow.
Long term.
Yeah, that's a long con. That's a long con.
Yeah.
The Nazi party was pretty intense. I don't think they thought they were going anywhere. Like,
yeah. I mean, I'm just sad they missed the opportunity to do a penis because I would have done a penis. That would have been funny.
I don't think the Nazi party was known for their comedy.
Yeah, but it's got like longevity. Like, you know, Nazi parties come and go. Penises are funny
penis
forever.
Jokes there forever.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God. Like, it was removed.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah. So the Brandenburg State Authority is concerned about damage to the region's image and the possibility that the area would become a pilgrimage site of modern Nazi supporters, right? Because let's not make any fucking mistake. There are Nazis in 2018, baby.
That's true.
Big bold claims, political claims by fucking unfeatured articles. attempted to destroy.
Sorry, we haven't done that before.
Yeah. So the state authority attempted to destroy the design by removing 43 of the 100 large. So there are 100 trees, by the way.
Right.
It's massive.
That's a big old.
In 1995. However, the figure remained discernible with the remaining 57 trees, well as some trees which had regrown. And in 2000, German tabloids published further aerial photographs showing the prominence of the swastika.
Mm. Can you imagine if they're just like, oh, was the swastika yellow or green? Just get rid of the green ones. I'm sure that'll do it. Yeah, that'll do it.
By this time, ownership of around half the land on which the trees sat had been sold into private land.
Mm.
So imagine if you bought a piece of land. Oh, by the way.
Accidentally bought a swastika.
There's half a swastika on it. but permission was granted to fell a further 25 trees on the government-owned area on December 1st, 2000, and the image was largely obscured. So that's it's pretty much gone now.
Yeah.
There's a couple of the trees left, but you can't. That's not there anymore.
Nah. You wouldn't look at it and be like, that's a swastika. Friend, is a Nazi symbol. No.
Jeez. But yeah.
I hope not.
Intense, right?
That's hectic.
Yeah.
Like... That there's got to be some effort gone into that to plant 100 bloody like little baby trees.
Yeah, well, the Hitler Youth, they did things like the Scouts do, and that kind of stuff.
Right,
it was Nazi Germany's version of the Scouts, right? And it was just because it was all these young kids, but they were like just indoctrinated
they
with
just
all this
know.
Shit.
Yeah.
It's in reading about the Hitler Youth stuff is like probably along with like the records of like the actual things that went on like during the Holocaust and that kind of thing.
Mm.
Hitler Youth is probably the next like most distressing thing to read.
That's scary.
Just like the corruption of these young minds.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's so intense.
I can't believe they tried to take it down and failed and like had to do it again. Like, get rid of these trees. We did it bad.
Look, there's a swastika in the tree.
And then we sold it to some guy.
That.
Oh, shit. Oh, no.
We got so half of
not
it. That'll be enough, right?
I could do it. I could do it in a day. You just chop down the...
You could chop 100 trees down in a day, James.
Watch me.
I will.
Uh-huh.
The first... We'll have our first unfeatured articles video.
And it's me chopping down
100
trees.
We'll contact Vice. They'll send you over there.
Do it. Fight me, trees. You don't even have arms. I'll just stomp on this grey goo.
These bad boys.
And I'll fight some trees and I'll stomp on some grey goo.
Once again,
we've come full circle.
You've
got a problem with the environment, don't you, mate?
I have a problem with Nazis.
Yeah,
fair.
Any tree that supports Nazis, they should go.
Yeah, get
not in my Australia.
Take that, you racist trees.
Yeah, you bastards.
I got arms. What have you got? Your racism. My arms beat that. Go on.
Please.
There's been a couple of similar incidents.
Uh-huh.
In the late 1970s, American troops discovered a swastika along with the numbers 1933 planted in a similar style in the forest in a forest in Hesse.
Mm.
Where is that? Da, 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 da. In France? No, Hesse of the Federal Republic of Germany. Oh, no, so it is... Oh, it's a region in Germany. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, so American troops were... In the 1970s... Okay, so this would have been during the time of, again, the split in Germany. So this would be in the kind of western area of West Germany.
Sure.
And then in September 2006, the New York Times reported on another forest swastika in Ikinargan in Kyrgyzstan, positioned on the edge of the Tian Shan Mountains. The image, mirror image fir tree swastika is about 200 meters across.
Jesus.
Myths and legends about how and when the swastika came to be planted in Soviet territory. End of sentence. Myths and legends about how and when the swastika came to be planted in Soviet territory, full stop. Oh, someone needs to edit this article.
That
on this episode of Broken Links.
Broken Links.
We investigate.
That is a broken link, jeez.
Episode of Blue Balls, more like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, so, yeah, forest swastika.
Let's fight some racist trees.
Yeah, let's take them down.
All right.
Put them in the bin.
But first, let's decide who was the best article.
Let's do that immediately. Riley, do you want to go first?
No.
Oh, well, fair
just
enough.
Choose an article.
All right. And that's it, folks. Thanks very much
end
for joining
us. End of the show.
Us.
Oh, my God. What is your aversion to picking first?
I'm indecisive.
Fair enough. All right. I'm going to go. Wait, let's do a recap. I did Forest Swastika. James?
I did
Code.
Esoteric Programming Languages.
And you did Grey Goo.
I did Grey Goo.
I'm going to go Grey Goo.
Yeah, I'm also going to go Grey Goo.
Cool. I don't have to decide that.
No, decide. Just pick one.
Esoteric Programming Languages.
Yeah.
Just made me mad.
Mine was a bit intense. I'll cop that.
Yours made me want to fight some trees.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And we don't actually know that.
I back yours for because I now want to see James Kehoe chop down 100 trees in a day.
I'll do it.
I'll change my vote. I'm going to vote for myself despite what we said
last
time.
You cannot do that. It's Grey Goo.
It's Grey Goo wins.
Yeah. Grey Goo is the winner this week.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that is the end of our episode for today. Episode 14.
Woo.
Oh, next week, boys. Episode 15.
Got a special
another
friend.
Guest episode.
Oh, look
we're
going to
try
out.
And do those every 5 episodes.
If we can.
If we can. Hopefully, we probably can. We've got some friends. We know some people. It'll happen. Yeah. But next week, we have Brisbane actor... comedian and fellow good time boy.
Yes.
Sam Webb.
He's on it.
Coming on the podcast.
Yep.
Oh, he's a good boy.
Oh my God. He is he's a renegade and it's sure to be a loose episode.
Can't wait to have him in.
Oh, it's going
to
be a good time.
I wonder if it'll go for 52 minutes. That sounds I like something might. That would happen. Yeah.
What are you doing? Okay, we recorded the episode before this one. We already know what happens. You ruined the image. I was trying
well.
To be.
Yeah, well.
I was trying to keep the fourth wall.
So I'm the bad boy of the podcast. All right. Okay.
If you don't chop down those 100 trees, you're out.
Yeah, dude, like, you are gone. I will drop you so fucking quickly.
Yeah.
I'll drop you quicker than a tree.
You can find us on Facebook. We are facebook.com/unfeaturedarticles.
We're on Instagram as Unfeatured Articles.
And we are on Twitter as Unfeatured Pod. All of our episodes are up to this one and any of the ones coming out in the future, you can find on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or any other podcatcher of your choice.
Mm-hmm.
We've got merch, boys.
We've got merch. Yes.
This is the first episode that we've recorded. It came out a couple of episodes before, but this is the first one where we can finally talk about it.
Yes.
You can buy t-shirts, hoodies,
yes,
coffee mugs.
With our damn names on them.
With our logo and our damn names
boys,
on them.
Can I tell you what I'm so excited about?
What?
Two words. Dog bandanas.
What are dog bandanas?
They're bandanas for your dog and you can get one with our logo
You're
on it.
You're joking.
No. It's real.
Oh, stop it.
Hero's getting one.
Yeah,
I'm getting one for Hero.
I'm getting one for every dog I know.
Holy shit, yes.
I'm just going to have a stockpile and go to a dog park and be like, here, have this.
Hand them out for free.
Yeah. I'll buy them. I'll do it.
I'm in extreme debt, but I just want these dogs to have my podcast logo on them.
That is
amazing.
It's true.
Amazing.
I've never been happier.
Head to shop.spreadshirt.com.au/thatsnotcanon to find all of the merch for all of the different shows on the That's Not Canon Productions Network.
But specifically ours.
Specifically ours.
You just railed off that web address as well.
I've been doing some purchasing, boys. No doubt.
The dog bandanas are out of stock until December.
If you are looking for dog bandanas, they're in the accessories tab. That's a pro tip from your boy, Jimmy K.
Your boy,
Jimmy K.
I've ordered a hoodie.
I've also got a hoodie and I have a couple of things for my other show that I won't name.
My songs suck. It's
That's
a good
it.
Show.
All right, fair enough.
It's a good show.
You said it, not me.
I'm so excited by that. Holy shit.
Our theme song is Pucatorian Friends it by is. Kevin MacLeod.
Indeed.
We're here on the That's Not Canon Productions Network, as I mentioned.
Thank you to them. Thank you so much to them.
And, well, that'll about do us, boys. And as always, friends, browse responsibly.
A mess. War, famine, politics.
Why can't everyone just get along?
Yeah, like in musicals. Musicals fix everything.
If people listened and learned from musicals, everything would be better.
Music, lights, and spontaneous choreography. What isn't there to love?
If you want to learn all of life's important lessons,
or just listen to some musical theatre nerds wax lyrical,
subscribe to Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know, wherever you find fun and funny podcasts.
Or at our website at thatsnotcanonproductions.com.
A That's Not Canon Productions podcast.